The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 476. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. My guest for this episode is a returning guest who first originally appeared just a few months ago in January of 2025. He came on the program to talk about his new project, which is a cool comic book called Lost in the Shuffle. Of course, I'm talking about Alex M. Clark. Now, Lost in the Shuffle is a unique book. It's all about two pals who are on the run from some dastardly villains, and they kind of do this car trip, this road trip, if you will, across the United States, trying to outrun their problems and whatnot. And originally when Alex came on in January, the status of issue 2 was a little bit up in the air. I told him that at any time he wanted to come back and give us an update, he was more than welcome to. And lo and behold, he reached out a couple weeks ago and said issue 2 is ready to go and I want to come on and talk about it. So I'm curious to see what Alex has to tell us about the project. Of course, we'll recap a little bit of issue 1 as well. So it's going to be a great episode. It's going to be a fun episode. But before we get to my conversation with Alex, I need to thank a great sponsor of this podcast, World's Greatest Comics. You know, they have everything that you can need or want for your comic book collection. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, toys, collectibles. They have actually, behind the counter, a Mad magazine from 1960 that was covering the Nixon-Kennedy campaign. That's right. That's some of the premier stuff that they have at the store. So you owe it to yourself, especially if you're in the Columbus, Ohio area, to stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But you can also check them out online. Their website is wgcomics.com, and you can find them on Facebook. Just look for at WG Comics. And again, I truly do appreciate the support throughout the years that World's Greatest Comics has given the PVD Cast. Again, thank you, and thank you one more time. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Alex M. Clark. Ladies and gentlemen, making his return to the PVD Cast is Mr. Alex Clark, Alex M. Clark, so that he's not confused with all those imposters out there. Alex, how are you?
I am so good, and thank you for throwing that M in there. Stands for moron.
So I was going to hold off on this question, but I guess we'll get to it right now. You just kind of made fun of yourself. Are you still kind of beating yourself up over the Kickstarter from a few months ago?
No, failure has never really stopped me. I'm kind of always lived in a life of like mediocrity. So to have a Kickstarter that didn't really pan out, I don't look at it as a failure. I look at it as a learning experience, obviously. Somebody who's been laid off, gone through a divorce, and has had multiple jobs, you're like, you know what? What have I learned from this situation? To be honest with you, everyone I've talked to was like, the Kickstarter probably was not the best timing because everyone was so busy with everything going on that I think if you tried again at another time for the next issue, I think you're just going to be in a better place. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
And let's talk about it for those who don't know. And I encourage you to go back to episode 459 and hear all about it. But the timing was right around Christmas time, which is what kind of the linchpin was to this whole plan, right?
Yes. I thought, you know what's a really good idea? Let's launch this thing right around Thanksgiving and have it end right around the new year. And I think just, you know, again, everyone's in the hustle and bustle of the holiday season and everyone has way more things to do with their time and money and lives than to worry about my silly little comic book. So here we are, 2025. Kickstarter was not a success, but I have finished the comic book with my team of banditos and it is here. It exists. Lost in the Shuffle number 2 is a thing.
Okay. Well, let's talk about a quick summary of the book Lost in the Shuffle for those folks that are maybe not going to check out episode 459, which shame on you if you have that attitude, but nonetheless, yeah, let's hear a summary about the tale.
Okay. Tale of Two Morons once again. So I explain this, it's my elevator pitch. You have essentially two best friends, two kind of losers. One has a gambling problem. He has a bad hand and owes a gambling debt back to the local mob. His best friend says, I have a really bad idea on how we could get that money back. Let's rob an armored car. So they do. It goes horribly wrong, sideways in an instant. Somebody dies. Now they have $35,000 in a bunch of baggies. They're on the run from the mob and the FBI. That's how issue number one ends. And their thought is the only thing that they can do is to go to Portland, Oregon, where one character's dad lives to save them because they're kind of out of options.
Well, those two characters are Quinn and Morgan.
Yes.
Do you want to tell the folks a little bit more about those two characters?
Sure. Quinn and Morgan. So Quinn is your stereotypical, woe is me, everything goes wrong, my life sucks, my dad left, my mom died of cancer, my girlfriend broke up with me, I had all the hopes and dreams of the world and things just went sideways in my life. Then you have the best friend who, just imagine if your best friend was Jack Black. He is just that guy from every movie you've seen who is like, I'm crazy. I have a bad idea. Let's go out to a bar. Let's go drinking. Let's go drive fast cars. I have really bad ideas, but man, life is going to be fun and interesting. They're best friends. They've known each other since elementary school, and they are literally ride or die besties.
And you also have another character that's pretty important as well, Richards. Can you talk a little bit about him?
Yeah. So issue number one kind of is really just about the two guys setting up their story. And issue number two is where we really start to introduce more characters. So that's where now you officially have the FBI agent who is leading the charge on trying to find these guys. He's in charge of trying to find them. He is on the hunt. He has ulterior motives. There's a dark, sinister, shadowy figure who is kind of, the puppeteer behind the strings. Agent Richards is out to find them and he's going to do whatever he can to cross this great wide country to track them down and put them in jail.
Is there any other characters in issue two that you want to highlight real quick, since that's kind of the new addition, so to speak, to the story of Quinn and Morgan?
Yeah. So with issue number two, I went back to my roots of living in rural Indiana, and I thought, okay, if I'm on a road trip and just nothing ever goes right for these two, what's going to happen when they're driving across the Midwest and they have a blown tire and they stumble upon this old crotchety, creepy farmer who lives out in the middle of nowhere? And again, things just go south real fast. They have a blown tire. They just need a telephone. They just need a tow. They just need a new tire, something. And of course, nothing goes right. And turns out that he's a little bit creepier, a little bit more murdery than they originally expected. Now, I don't want to give too much away, but there's another character that's a bit of a surprise at the very end who will be instrumental in the rest of the series that goes from two main characters to three. And eventually there will be four, because my story is a little bit inspired by Wizard of Oz. So we're picking up friends along the way on this merry road trip from hell.
Is that the one character you just mentioned? Is that Mr. Snodgrass?
That is Mr. Snodgrass. Yes. Old Man Snodgrass, who is loosely based on a person who lived near me growing up in rural Indiana.
Well, talking about Quinn and Morgan and inspiration.
Yep.
Did you have friends that were like Quinn and Morgan?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I think like any writer, and again, I'm kind of more illustrator than writer, but I'm becoming more writer than illustrator. It's weird. It's a whole thing. I think everyone has those personalities in them. So part of it is me, part of it is friends, and then part of it is pulled from like movies. Like if you think about movies that I've pulled some of my inspiration from, I'm thinking Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I'm thinking Midnight Run. I'm thinking every Edgar Wright movie, you know, like those types of characters. You got the straight guy and then you have the goofball. So you have those like dichotomies, the juxtaposition of personalities. I'm talking dating back to like Abbott and Costello, like that kind of stuff.
Wow.
But at the same time, when you're writing these characters, you write what you think that person's going to do or say, and you pull from what would I do or say in this instance? And then you switch and you're like, okay, if I was that character or that time, I probably had too many drinks. What would I have said or done in that instance? Or yeah, to your point, you think about that one person in your life who probably was the one who actually bought you too many shots after you said, I'm going to do one. And then they were like, nope, we're doing four. That's the Morgan character. And you write for what they would do or say in that instance.
Is it fair to say, and I'm going to get a little philosophical here, if you don't mind. All right. Is it fair to say that Quinn and Morgan are both literally and figuratively lost?
Very. Yes. That's where the title came from. That was where I came up with the idea, man, seriously, 10, 12, 15 years ago. The shuffle was really about the playing cards and the gambling, but at the same time, the fact that they're lost, not only figuratively as people, but also lost in the country because nobody can seem to find them as they're off the grid and trying to get just across from like Midwest to Portland. They are lost. Quinn has no like ambition. He just lost it from just getting kicked in the nuts constantly in life. And Morgan puts on a brave face of, yeah, everything's great and fine and wonderful, but deep down he is just broken, like inherent. So yeah, the only thing that is keeping them from probably doing damage to themselves physically is each other. They're really tied at the hip. So that was kind of where it came from. The idea was like, okay, they're lost in the shuffle physically, like geographically, but also emotionally. And they just can't move on with life until they figure out like, what's their purpose?
What's the feedback been like for the project? You know, you have issue one out, you just got issue two ready to go. You've been a couple different places like space, which we'll talk about here shortly. And so what's the feedback been for people who have picked up the book, read it, and maybe got in touch with you via social media or whatever?
The biggest thing that I've heard, which was surprising to hear, was this is the best comic that no one's ever heard of. You know, just like, I love these characters. I know these characters, and I've never felt so in touch with characters so quickly. Like even the first issue was only 20 pages, but I had a couple guys that were like, I knew these guys. I know these guys. I have friends exactly like this, and I can see where they're going, and I'm already vested in their story. And I was just like, okay, like, yes, the story and the narrative and where I'm going, I think is really interesting. But the fact that people after one or two issues were just like, oh, I'm in. I don't even know where we're going with this, but I am in. I think that to me makes me feel really good. I've actually started writing a novel, which is a little bit terrifying. And I think that's one of the things the feedback I've also gotten in that is your character development is really good. So I don't know. Maybe that's just where my wheelhouse is, but that's been some of the best feedback I've gotten so far.
Let's talk about this novel. I didn't know anything about this novel. Let's talk about it. What's made you decide that you're going to write a novel?
Because I'm a lunatic. Because I'm a crazy ADHD person who can't stay, single-minded on one project. So I had a dream And I woke up and I was like, that was the most messed up, disturbing dream I've probably had in a long time. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's a book. That's the start of like a three-part fantasy book series. And it was all about a cursed witch that came back to a cursed, well, it was a witch that came back to a cursed family with a long lost, like Gaelic, you know, whether it's Irish, Scottish, what have you, family curse that this witch put on them like 200-400 years ago. And she kidnaps the firstborn male of this family lineage for every generation. And she takes the child back to a fairy world and then raises that child as her own up to a certain age and then murders the child and takes the child's essence to keep her immortal.
Okay.
And I was like, oh my gosh, well, where do you go from there? And I was like, okay, well, the kid, then the baby boy has a sister and the sister's pissed off. And then she's going to go into the fairy world and she's going to get this little baby brother back. And so that's kind of like the impetus for the entire story. And then, of course, I developed like, there's a grandma who's Scottish and she knows the lineage and the history and the dad's gone. Where did the dad go? Oh, the dad tried to find the baby and the dad got trapped in the fairy. I'm like, okay, I got deep. I went real deep. I've already written the first chapter and a whole synopsis and character bios. And I've already gone a little bit crazy with it.
When you sit down to write, do you have a routine? Because I know that it's been said a lot of times in some stuff that I've read that, you know, the finding that routine for somebody that's new to writing is incredibly important. Like do 2 hours in the morning or whatever. So do you have a routine or a way in which you like to write?
No. My ADHD brain was like, okay, I got this out of my system and I made a nice little outline. And I think I wrote down so much of a framework for the story. And then I was like, okay, put that to the side and I'll come back to it because I have a third issue to work on Lost in the Shuffle. So I should probably get back to the thing that I've actually put time and, you know, money and investments into. So, but I did have my wife, she's a huge book person and she's actually starting to become like a book influencer because she's on Instagram and all, you know, TikTok and everything else. But I'm having her kind of read it to make sure it doesn't sound ridiculous. And the interesting thing that she said was the characters that you've written are fantastic, but I don't think you're writing enough detail for the reader because you traditionally have written for comic books that you're going to draw later. So like your dialogue is great, your character building is great, but I need you to paint a picture with words because the way that you've been writing for the past 5 years is all about, I'm going to draw it later. I was like, okay. Oh, that's a really good point. So I was talking to a writer at Space and she said the same thing. She said going from poetry to comics was really interesting and she wants to go to prose, but she's terrified. And I was telling her about this whole process and she was like, oh my gosh, you're right. We're so used to writing for people who are going to draw something and they're going to fill in those gaps that you don't realize you have to fill in those gaps with words.
Let's get back to issue two. Let's talk about the creative crew. So let's give them their flowers, as the kids say. Tell us a little bit about the talented guys and gals that helped you out.
Yes. The first issue, I was writer, artist, inker, illustrator, colorist, whole nine yards. My best buddy from college, who's also a graphic designer, Sean, he did the letters for issue one. So that was good. Then it dawned on me, this is going to take me forever. So I actually found Robbie Melendez, who lives about 2 miles from here. And he's a fantastic artist, also a comic book artist. And he did the digital colors for the book and then also did a variant cover. So Robbie's awesome. He was at Space with me. We sat next to each other and talked the whole time. But yeah, so it's essentially me, Sean doing letters, Robbie doing interior colors, and then Chris Wood, who's a buddy from work, is editing just to make sure that everything makes sense. I don't have any grammar errors and I don't mess something up, you know, with any plot holes down the road. So small little tight-knit team, but it's been great so far.
Excellent. Yeah. And you mentioned you're working on issue three. And I think in our first conversation, you mentioned that you have, what, 12 total issues you would like to have this tale told in?
Yes, I do. I'm a psychopath. And yes, I have it written to 12 issues. I think I could probably, no, at one point in time, I was like, maybe I could get it down to like 9, 10. And I just kept writing more and more because I have these guys literally all over the place in the United States and in the upper Northwest. So yeah, I think it's at 12 right now. So that's why I need to get a move on into issue number 3. So I've been starting to relook at my script that I already have written, because I've written the first 5 books, like the first 5 issues. I've written those, but the whole entire thing's outlined. So now I'm going back to just, you know, zhuzh and make sure that everything makes sense from the script perspective. And then, yeah, I'm starting to lay down pencils and inks again.
Where can folks get their hands on a copy of issue 2, by the way?
Okay, so if you go to my website, alexmclarkart.com, I opened up a new shop, so you can link out to my Big Cartel shop. I used to have a Store Envy shop, but apparently it wasn't working. So yeah, I now have a Big Cartel shop. I can even tell you what that website is for the Big Cartel shop. Let me look at it real fast. It's actually amccomicsillustration.bigcartel.com. Issue 1, 2, and a couple bundles are out there right now, and you can get whatever you want. But yeah, my website's alexmclarkart.com, and then you can find me, you know, on socials, TikTok. I'm on Blue Sky now, Instagram, all those bits and bobs.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Alex for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, comic book supplies. They got you covered for your fandom. So, you need to stop by the store and check them out. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. You can find them on the internet. WGComics.com is a web address, and they're pretty active on their Facebook page. Just search for @WGComics. All right, let's talk about a few other projects that you've worked on, because I know we did not talk about this one. I know we talked about the other two I have listed, but we didn't talk about Cora in the Moon.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that, because it's a kid's book, and, you know, obviously it's a different change of pace, if you will, because it's, there you go, you got a copy of it right there. So how did you end up working on this project?
Yeah, Cora in the Moon. So for a while, I was doing children's books. A buddy of mine, he had an idea for a children's book a couple years ago, and we worked on one called When I Grow Up, and it was kind of a interactive book where you could put your physical picture into the book, and it was about like, when I grow up, I want to be a blank, and you could see your face in, I'm going to be a sports player, I'm going to be a actor, I'm going to be whatever. And so we came up with that, and we thought, well, that was fun. And he's a buddy, I've known him for years, I worked with him, and he came up with this idea for Cora in the Moon, and kind of a children's storybook around, you know, his, you know, a girl, she loves the moon. She wakes up in the middle of the night. So you think she goes up to the moon, cloud takes her to the moon, and she has adventures on the moon and meets a lot of friends. And when she returns home, you kind of wonder, was it a dream? Was it reality? We'll never know. So yeah, we actually worked on this children's book together and got it published through a small indie publisher called Gen Z Publishing. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I watercolored the entire thing, which, you know, was beautiful, but it took me far too long to do. So, but yeah, I really had a lot of fun with the illustrations.
Yeah. That's some really great art.
Yeah. So just a different, you know, when you go to art school, it's like, you know, you kind of stretch those muscles every now and then to break out the actual paints and brushes and try something a little bit different.
Would you do another kid's book?
Oh yeah. But I would probably do my own. I think that's again, I've got sketchbooks full of ideas over here, and I've probably got 2 or 3 other children's books kind of already thought through that I would love to crack open again someday in the future and write and illustrate myself.
Okay, let's talk about 2 projects that we did highlight before, but I'd like to highlight them again, and they are the polar opposite of a children's book. Yep. Let's talk about Ophelia's Revenge.
Ophelia's Revenge, yeah. That was another fun one. That came out, man, when was that? So actually, that was kind of funny, interesting. When I was at Space, some guy came up to me and pulled an Ophelia's Revenge out of a bag and board and said, oh my gosh, I saw that your name was on here and I need you to autograph this. I was like, what? what kind of nonsense is this? So Ophelia's Revenge was through Red Stylo Media, small indie publisher out of Baltimore. And she always created anthologies that were based around literary stories. So she would do Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, Edgar Allan Poe, stuff like that. And she did one that was all around Shakespeare. And for a re-release, she was like, I'm going to do a one-shot called Ophelia's Revenge about a Renaissance fair with some characters. And it goes literally belly up when a apprentice witch summons a demon, and the demon comes and kills everyone at the Ren Fair. So, yeah. So next thing I know, she's having me draw everyone getting murdered. So there's the demon crawling out of a lake. And then, let's see, this one had a guy having his junk ripped off. And then this was a two-page spread full of people all getting murdered violent at a Renaissance fair.
I think you can convert this to a children's book.
Right? Oh, wait, here's a good one. Here's the best one.
Torn asunder. Well, yeah. Yes, sir, you are.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I was completely shocked by that because she knows that I did children's books. And then she was like, oh, can you draw some people getting like by like an evil demon witch, like ripping them in half and like chopping their heads off and having like a jousting spear shoved up their butt. And I was like, yeah, sure. I would love to. So that was a fun little jaunt. Yeah. She always has me murder people. It's a very weird thing. I haven't done anything with her for a couple of years. I don't even know if she's publishing anymore, but always fun when she comes a calling.
Well, let's talk about The Transfer. Was that another one of those anthologies? Or it refresh my memory, or was it just your own standalone project?
No, it was another anthology. That was on the, I think that was the Jekyll and Hyde. Yeah, that was the Jekyll and Hyde one. Yeah, that was kind of a more psychological one. It was kind of like a scientist who was trying to do an experiment and kind of went crazy. And it turns out that he was copying himself. He, you know, constantly, and he ended up killing himself, but it wasn't him because he kept creating versions of himself. And then he would murder them, and then he would put their remains in a basement because he needed to. It was just a whole thing. Every time he tried to do this experiment, it went wrong. And instead of like healing him or whatever, it actually just kept making duplicates of himself. It was kind of like the movie The Prestige. And he decided, well, I have to like get rid of the evidence. So then he had a basement full of his own dead bodies that he would have to bury every time. He twisty, very weird. Yeah, it was kind of very Hitchcockian, if you will. Yeah.
How'd you come up with that plot?
I didn't write it.
Oh, you didn't write it. You were just art. I didn't write
it. Again, it was like, oh, hey, we're going to have you do this. And yeah.
Hey, we need murder. Call Alex.
Yes.
Hey, can you murder some other people in a comic book, Alex?
Yeah. So like, yeah, a duplicate of himself, like a copy of himself came after himself with a knife. And then he had to blow the guy's head out. And then he dragged him down to the basement and then got a shovel and started burying himself. And then you look back across this long basement, there's just like mounds of clearly dead bodies everywhere. And then you see a shelf, a wall of like little baby fetuses that are clearly him.
All right, let's talk about your childhood here. Mm-hmm. I assume you were always a creative kid.
Yeah, I was a bit weird. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Favorite things to do on a Saturday morning as a kid?
Oh, I was that kid who was watching cartoons. You know, during the 80s, I was that guy who's always watching Saturday morning cartoons. You name it. If it was like G.I. Joe, He-Man. Man, do you remember the, what were those bears? The Gummy Bears, the Disney cartoon, The Gummy Bears. You know, if you
don't remember that one.
Oh, you've got to check that out. That was such a good one. For all listeners out there, go check out The Gummy Bears. But yeah, no, I was that kid who was either outside running around pretending to be an army man or a transformer or a G.I. Joe. So I was a wild kid. We lived out in the country on like 3 acres of just country land. My parents had tons of trees. So I was climbing a tree or running around with, you know, friends riding bikes through people's yards. And just, I was a little bit of a wild child. I was the, you know, I was the wild friend growing up. Like, I had a friend who was more that timid friend. I was the one that was always getting us in trouble or daring him to do something that was probably going to get him hurt. I was a bit of a weirdo.
So how did you end up getting involved in the art world?
I've always drawn. I think that was, again, everyone knew that I was very ADHD. Before even anyone even called it ADHD, it was just like, he's special. He's a little hyperactive. My mom would always be like, he can be a little much at times. So they always saw that I could draw. I mean, even my parents still have drawings from when I was like 4 or 5 years old. My dad said, he's drawing Star Wars characters at like 5 years old. He watched the movies and he's just drawing like from the action figures. So from a very early age, to keep me occupied and out of trouble, my teachers would have me draw during class or draw for special projects. They'd be like, oh, hey, we're going to do this, you know, book project and write the story and come up with the illustrations. Or it's Halloween, so we're going to have you draw something. And everyone would draw stick figures. And I'm over here drawing a fully fleshed out mummy with all the wrappings and everything else. And, you know, like poses, like third grade. So that was just me. I've always been drawing, and my parents were music teachers. And they said, he should just be an artist. You know, like, let's just push him and help kind of influence that. So I was always in art classes, and they'd send me to art camps and everything else just to keep me busy and out of trouble.
And then you got a job as a graphic designer.
Yeah, I went to school for art and wanted to be an illustrator, and kind of looked at the lay of the land and was like, illustrator always trying to hustle for my job, or graphic designer who could take my illustration skills and apply it towards marketing, ad campaigns. And at the time, that was digital wasn't even a thing. So by the time I went to school, then it was like, oh, you could do this in animation, digital, websites, things like that. So it just was a natural evolution.
So we talked on your last appearance about your favorite comic books, heroes or characters or whatnot. So I'm going to ask, what is a prized possession in the world of comics that you have that you're proud of?
That I'm proud of?
Like, I will share, I have the first three issues of Shogun Warriors.
Ooh,
that's great. Yeah, from 78 or 79, yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. I love old weird Batman memorabilia. I love those old, like, okay, I'm just going to be weird right now. Like just, like these things.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if I see these anywhere, I'm just, like, going to grab them. Here's a really good one. This is hilarious. I found this at a flea market and I had to get it. So, okay. So I saw this and I was like, I don't even care what it is. I'm going to buy it. It is a Batman hairbrush.
For people. Yeah. So I was going to say the other thing that Alex showed was old glasses with Shazam and Batman on them. But you know, as you were opening that up, I saw it said Avon on the top. And the funniest thing is, My podcasting pal, he was at a yard sale and somebody had an Avon like bubble bath, but it was Flint from G.I. Joe.
No.
You spin his head off and then his bubble bath. I don't know. I didn't try the bubble bath because I'm like, this bubble bath is like 38 years old. I'm not pouring it in the bathtub. You
know. Like, it's full of lead. That lead paint. That's all it is. No, I love memorabilia, but I also have like, I think like a run of like 200 issues of Incredible Hulk. You know, okay. I probably have like a run of like, you know, 200 or 300 issues of like some Batman thing. It's just like, I used to have, and I think I actually sold it because I was stupid, but I had like literally Silver Surfer number one. It was in terrible condition, but I had it at one point in time, you know, and I think I sold it because at one point in time I moved and I was just like, I got to get rid of it. So I love old comic books. You know, I grew up on, that's what got me into it was we went to a garage sale one time and, you know, they had a box of old comics. My parents were like, eh, here's a buck, you know, and I got like 4 comic books and that was it. That's what got me into it. That's what started the whole thing. But yeah, I love old vintage stuff.
Yeah. Those are pretty cool. Did those come from a fast food restaurant?
I don't even know. It says Pepsi Collector Series 1966.
That's some cool stuff.
Yeah. I just love that kind of stuff. I need more shelves. I'm officially out of shelves, but I have so many. I've got like a ton of action figures dating back to, you know, the 80s. Like even the old Super Friends, like action figures. Yeah, I've got some of those somewhere.
Well, we talked a little bit about it, and let's get maybe a little bit deeper into it. How was space for this year? You were out there at the Small Press and Alternative Comics Expo. I'm a big fan. I did not get to attend, unfortunately, due to a death in the family, and I was out of town, so I'm a little bit envious. So fill me in on what I missed, Alex.
It was really good. I'm not going to lie. Space was great. So for those who don't know, it's Small Press and Alternative Comics Expo. This is probably my first time in about 5 years. It's been a long time since I went, but a bunch of my buddies talked me back into coming. So it was great. Bob Corby runs it. He's awesome. He's just like the nicest, sweetest guy ever. Last time I went, it was not at the Expo Center at the State Fair. So the space was really great. It was an older building. Everyone there was just the nicest, sweetest people. I mean, you know, we're all just a bunch of weirdos. Everyone's there to just really showcase their book. Everyone wants to say, you know, look what I made. Look what I created, whether it's a zine, whether it's a comic book, whether it's art. They just want to tell the world, I've been in my basement like a lunatic, like making these things, and I just want to share these with the world. So it was great to see people I hadn't seen in a while. Like I said earlier, I met somebody that knows a bunch of people I know, and we found out that we all have the same friends, and we don't know how we've never met before. It's actually kind of uncanny. So, you know, you're like, oh, we just became best friends. Oh my gosh, we love the same things, and we love art, and I bought his books, and he bought my books. There were people from out of state who had never been before, and were like, oh my gosh, I'm from Michigan, or I'm from Pennsylvania, and I heard great things about this show, so I needed to come down to Ohio to check it out. So it was a lot of fun. I think the biggest challenge was just there was a ton of construction happening mm-hmm. on like the Expo Center campus. So there was no parking anywhere near the building. So the only way to get there was to park probably a good quarter mile away and then walk. So that was a bit bummer, because I think if there had been more traffic, it probably would have been a better show. But the camaraderie, the community, it was good. There were so many younger kids. One of the guys that lives down the street from me, JM Hunter, he has a small little like comic group that meets, mm-hmm. but he also mm-hmm. teaches like comics for kids. And he had a bunch of high schoolers there that were showing off their little zines and comics just to have a little venue just to show what they've been working on. And so that was just cool to meet all of them. And they were so like, you know, bright eyed and bushy tailed and just like, just if anyone saw their stuff, they were just so happy that anyone took 30 seconds to look at their work, mm-hmm. you know? So it's just a cool environment. Cool time for everybody.
Yes. Excellent. And you know what? I say it many times, and I've had lots of those creators that go to space on the show. But I say it all the time. You should check it out. I mean, it's free. It's not like you're going to spend $8 to get in or whatever. It's free, yep. and it's a great venue for meeting independent comic book creators and seeing what's out there.
Yeah, some great work. Again, met new friends, and you look at the talent. It's shocking how much talent there is. And there was one row that was all kids from CCAD, Columbus College of Art and Design, that were just all together, and they were all just a bunch of, you know, 17, 18, 19 year olds just making comics and being goofballs. And it's like the next generation. So mm-hmm. you kind of see like, oh, here are people who are in their 30s and 40s who are still making stuff. And like, oh, here's what they're doing. And that's interesting. And that's cool. And that's kind of the future. So yeah, it's great.
All right. Going to wrap up with a couple of questions here. But number one, if you had the opportunity to have dinner with any comic book character, who would it be and why?
Oh, Lord. Oh, I would probably say I'm kind of in a Matt Murdock kick right now. And like, not Daredevil, like Matt Murdock. I think he's like one of the most interesting characters. And I finished the show, you know, the new episodes.
I'm behind. I haven't even started.
It's okay. It's really good. But like, I've always been a big Daredevil fan because I'm a huge Batman fan. I'm a huge Daredevil fan. They're basically very similar. But yeah, I would think that like Daredevil would probably be one of the guys, because I just love the lore, the character, his tormented Catholic soul, like, you know, just everything about him. I probably would want to hang out with Daredevil. That's weird, but it's true.
All right. Let's say a couple years from now, Hollywood comes knocking. Lost mm-hmm. in the Shuffle is going to be a movie.
Who do you cast as Morgan and Quinn?
That's a really good one. So somebody asked me that at Space because they were like, I loved issue one and I had some thoughts and ideas. So when I came up with the idea for these characters, this will tell you how long ago this was. Okay, are you ready for this? My character choices at the time were Adrian Brody for Quinn and Jack Black for Morgan. But what's interesting is now those guys are like 50. So
yeah.
So it'd have to be like someone who's like, you know, between 20 and 28 years old, because these guys are like, you know, early college age slackers. So I really don't know, but that's a really good question, because I'd have to like try and figure out who's kind of like popular nowadays. But that's kind of what I had in my brain when I thought of these characters. But then, yeah, every time I try to explain it, I'm almost like, imagine if Edgar Wright wrote a movie, but Tarantino directed it. Like, it's that dark, you know? And I always think of like Nick Frost and
Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg, you know, all again, great characters in that dichotomy, but at the same time, they're also in their 50s. So I need some younger blood in my head when I'm explaining these characters. Definitely.
Okay. All right. Well, Alex, let's talk one more time real quick about where folks can follow you on social media, your website again. Let's hit that big cartel store as well, because I don't know if I know I didn't get it written down, but nonetheless, hit us up with all your information.
Okay. Alex M. Clark, because there's a lot of Alex Clarks out there. Didn't realize that when I was getting into this whole thing. So alexmclarkart.com is my website. I'm going to be updating that very soon and in the near future with more and more and more content. I'm on Instagram at alexmclark78, because that's how old I am. I'm also on Blue Sky, which is kind of the new hotness for a lot of people. I'm on TikTok. Again, AlexMClark78, but I don't post that too often. And then my new big cartel shop is AMC Comics Illustration.BigCartel.com. And it will be linked off my website probably starting ASAP, because it's not currently, because I suck.
All right. So that's AMC Comics Illustration.BigCartel.com.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. There you go. I got it. Yeah. I wrote it down correctly this time. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Like cool. I said, I had an old shop and it stopped working for some odd reason. And I'm like, you know what? Screw you. I'm going to start one that actually works properly. And there it's already go. Started working for me. So great.
Cool deal. Any future places you're going to be, by the way, since we talked about Space, is there anything on the docket coming up? Any conventions or appearances that you're making?
Yes. So I was a little bit bummed. I didn't get in for Free Comic Book Day because we had some family things going on. But upcoming, I want to say, let's see. Of course, I don't know the dates. Let me look at a calendar because I'm an idiot. Definitely in June, I'm actually going to be at the Three Rivers Comic Con in Pittsburgh. So that's really exciting. I've never been there before. And then I'm also going to be at Pickerington Comic Fest here in Pickerington, Ohio, on May 31st. So that's actually a really good one. It's strange. It's at the library, but we have a lot of good local talent, and Robbie and I will both be there. And then I've started applying for fall and winter shows, and I've been told through the grapevine that I'm going to be at one at down in Miami University here in September. So I'm looking for about three more in the fall and winter, and I will keep my website updated with events.
Okay, there you go. I've been to the Pittsburgh Comic Con, the newer version and the older version as well.
Yep.
Haven't been there in about 3 years since they moved from their last venue, but it was a cool show the last time I went.
I've heard good things. I've heard that's a really good one to be at for more indie cons. You know, I've been to a couple that I was surprised to find out that they're more like people just wanted autographs of celebrities, and people walked right by all the creators just to get, you know, get to meet somebody famous. I'm like, okay, well, good to know. So trying to figure out which ones are better for, you know, indie creators.
Alex, thanks again, man, for coming back on. I appreciate your understanding. You know, when we first talked and we had some obstacles in the way that we had to overcome, and And I appreciate your flexibility on that. And thanks for stopping by, man, and keeping us updated on the project.
Of course, John. Thank you for having me again.
You're quite welcome. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Alex M. Clark, talking about his comic book, Lost in the Shuffle. And I want to thank Alex for taking some time out of his busy schedule to sit down and to give us an update on issue 2. And if you're interested in issue 1 or issue 2, definitely follow Alex online or go over to his website and check out what he's doing over there. All right, with that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you where you can get in touch with me if you have a question or comment about this episode or any episode for that matter. You can shoot me an email if you like. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is the email address. You can drop me a line over on Facebook, Threads, or Instagram. Just look for @PVDcast. And I'm still on Twitter under my personal Twitter handle of @PVDNVP. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know about how they can hear the PVDcast. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that as well. PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly and probably the best place to get all of the new episodes of the PVDcast. But you can also get the show through your favorite podcasting outlet or app. All you have to do is go to the search bar of that app or outlet, type in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it and you should find it. And by the way, if you are using one of those apps or outlets, please help me out. Rate and review the show. It helps drive me up in the ratings and it lets those companies know that you are listening to the PVDcast. So rate and review. And of course, subscribe. Make it easy on yourself so that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. Well, let me tell you about a third option that you have for hearing every great episode. That is through the Facebook page on Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. I do a little live broadcast where I run down this week's episode. So there you go. Three different ways to hear the PVDcast through PVDcast.com, through, of course, your favorite podcasting outlet or app. And of course, the live broadcast every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. All right, well, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for checking out the episode. I'm going to get on out of here. And with that, I'm going to say that I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2025.